All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your hosts for today's program, Dale Thronberry and Bob Gould.
And good day today on Sunday at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's Veterans Radio. This is Bob Gould here. Dale's with me. Dale.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
And our...
you guys get used to this new time schedule.
I know.
I have to write it down to all the things.
But anyway,
happy Father's Day, Bob. I know you wanted this. Today's program is dedicated to all of our fathers.
Yes.
And I'll let you read your lines.
Today's Veterans Radio program salutes all fathers, and especially those who served in the military, past and present. And may all your children have rich parents, huh?
Well, yeah, we wish on that one. But we certainly do want to thank our fathers for the lessons that they taught us. And for many of the veterans out there, I'm sure that many of our fathers were veterans also. And also joining us in the studio is Jim Falzone. Jim, good afternoon.
Great to be here this afternoon. And remembering my father, Bruce, served in the Navy in World War II, and my father-in-law, John, served in the Army in World War II. So they're no longer with us, but they're still in our hearts.
That's very true. And I guess I better put in a plug for... Bill Thronberry of the United States Coast Guard.
And Tim Theodore Gould, who was a Detroit policeman keeping Detroit safe he wanted to go so bad. He told me the bands were playing and he was ready to sign up. My mother just looked him right in the eye. Nope. And they weren't taking cops.
I was going to say, he was probably exempt.
Yeah, so he didn't get drafted, but they weren't taking cops back then. Well, today we've got one heck of a good program. But before we get to that, one of the things that I love the best, I love going to, and that's big band concerts and martial music. John Sousa, Stars and Stripes Forever. Boy, doesn't that get your old heart pounding and your eyes getting... Well, before I go any further, Jim, our partner, has something for us.
We've got one for you then, Bob. You're going to love this. This is Saturday, July 5th at the Wayne Ford Civic League in Wayne, on Wayne Road in Westland of Michigan. It'll be an evening concert. Performance starts at 7. Doors open at 6. You can call for ticket reservations. They're free, but they'd want to control the crowd to about 500 people.
Oh, so you got to have tickets.
Got to have a little ticket. 734-716-3432 will get you that free ticket. Come out to Westland and hear the 338th Army Band play a concert Americana.
Ooh, that ought to be cool. What's that phone? Is there happen to be a website for that?
There is not a website, but if you go to the website for the city of Westland, I know there's a button there that you can click on and get yourself right in there and get that free ticket. And again, the phone number is 734-716-3432, and it's brought to you by the Westland Veterans Association.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of events that are to be coming up very shortly, because we got the 4th of July coming up, and something else. You know, the folks are making vacation plans right now, and they're, okay, where can we go? Well, here's one place you can go. You can go to Ypsilanti, Michigan, August 9th and 10th, the...
Thunder over Michigan.
Thunder.
Returns.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. It always is exciting. And we've got the Thunderbirds are going to be there because the question has been, you know, they can afford to bring them out again. That's all because of you, Bob, talking to Congressman Dingell.
They've got gas money now. Yeah.
That's right.
They've got gas money. I like that. And who did that? John Dingell.
Well, he was certainly one of them that wanted to make sure that happened. And we're very grateful to our local congressional representatives for getting that program back on there. All the other thing I want to make sure is that if you do go to Thunder over Michigan again, go out and see the Sky Pilots, because they're bringing in Hueys again, folks, for rides. And I got to tell you, it was a thrill ride for me and a couple of other people that I took on them, and especially for young people. They can't believe that we flew
now
around
that
in
was,
those Model Ts.
Folks, I happened to be there. And Dale, how long has it been when you sat in that seat?
Well, I've been 40... 42 years, something like that.
What do you guys do when it's your last flight? I mean,
just glad to survive it, weren't you, Dale?
It was something that.
What did you say you did?
Oh, I jumped out of the helicopter, threw my helmet across the field, and said I made it. Ta-da! But 2,200 hours without breaking anything.
Don't you have any withdrawal or something from that?
Well, you do. I just didn't realize it at the time. Something to do with motorcycles and fast cars and and so forth that kind of tried to fill the gap there. And, you know, most of the people tried to do something like that. So,
well,
anyway, it was exciting. So, anyway, I encourage you to go out there and go to the Yankee Air Museum at any time. They have a flight simulator there that is for you to be a pilot on any type of airplane I think that's ever been invented. I flew right into Willow Run's main terminal.
It was
really cool. It's like a movie.
So we were talking about destination for vacations today, and Ypsilanti, Michigan, just about 20 miles outside of Ann Arbor and about 30 miles outside of Detroit. So you've got plenty of places that you can bring the family, plenty of places to eat, plenty of places to camp out, plenty of places to find a hotel or a motel. There also is so much historical significance there. That's where Willow Run, they built the B-24. We're going to be talking about that today, the B-24, Rosie the Riveter. But they have the Yankee Air Museum. Oh, museum, man, it's just a bunch of dead stuff. Not really. They have such cool things. And Dale was talking about that flight simulator. You know, they had that built for themselves. They actually had that built.
Well, I believe it. And if anybody is an airplane aficionado, they're going to really like anything that they see out there. They have from biplanes to B-52 bombers that you can
have your picture taken
and crawl around. They got a great little gift shop and all kinds of cool things. So I would encourage people to come out, especially for the Thunder over Michigan in August. It's very cool.
Well, I have to say, and I have one story about the Thunderbirds. I was covering the Dayton Air Show 3 years ago, and there was a number of us media for the media day, which is the day before the air show, and there were five of them coming in. Well, they'd just flown in from Colorado. They hadn't landed or what, and they flew in from Colorado, and they were doing their little acrobatics. Now, here they flew, I don't know, hour, 2 hours to get there, and they get to Dayton, and they were doing their upside downs and things and loops and that, and then they landed. And the gal who was running it said, Mr. Gould, you have plane number one. So I walked over to plane number one, and the pilot was climbing out. And the pilot was taking off the helmet and shook her hair.
You are a
She was thing. A major. Now, I don't know about you guys out there, but I know, and anybody who just flew 800 miles an hour and was, you know, like I asked her, how do you keep in shape to fly that thing? Because, Dale, you flew the flight simulator, and, folks, when you hit the yoke, when you hit the stick, the plane doesn't move.
Doesn't necessarily do what you think it's going to do right away, that's for sure.
It has a five-second delay. So you not only have to be physically, and I'm sure that pilot would have had to be physically ready, but you also have to be thinking at the same time. And boy, it really wasn't. I don't want any cards and letters coming in.
You're gonna get them anyway.
but I will say,
this phone number is
women. and Dale, you knew something about the wasps.
Well, the women air support pilots, I think it was. These are the women that flew the B-24s, B-29s during World War II.
They flew them.
Test flights. And they would fly them from the East Coast to the West Coast, and they also flew the targets behind the aircraft and all kinds of things, but they didn't get any credit until probably 5-10 years ago.
I mean, because they didn't have pilots if they were building the
B-24. They weren't entitled to veterans benefits.
And, ooh.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. So we called our friend here. No,
they called legal help.
We
for
called
veterans.
Legal help for veterans.
And I can't believe you guys are having this discussion without Brigadier General Carol Ann Fausson here to set you straight, Bob. The women can do whatever the men can do.
I know,
but just, say
you
that.
Weren't ready for that.
And it's so interesting to hear that. And now here they and when they flew the B-24s, somebody had to take them from Willow Run, Ypsilanti, Michigan, to the coast to go over to either Japan or over to Europe. And they're the real pilots, not real. Oh, Lord, I just said that. They weren't real. No, everybody was a real pilot. But it was so cool, and so little was known about it. There's also, I have a neighbor of mine who just retired from the Air Force, and she was a mechanic. And she flew the C-5, not in the air, but she moved it all around the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, think of that, folks. So if you're a daughter or a niece or granddaughter or whatever, and you're thinking about a career, don't be passing up the military, and especially the Air Force. You could be doing really cool things.
I do want to point out that the Blue Angels, which is the Navy Precision Air Team, also had women pilots there a couple of years ago out at Willow Run. And it was the same reaction when they got out of the airplane. Everybody kind of stared at them for a while.
I know.
But that's what's happened. That's what today's military is all about. So, you know, men and women have equal opportunities. Take advantage of them if you can. We still need you.
We still do. Thinking about equal opportunities, segue time, we got Conway Truckload on the line with us. And the top one, right, Dale?
Let him do it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, we're going to let... By the way, let's all say hello to Derek. Derek, our air boss. Derek?
Hello, everybody.
There we go.
Okay. Right now, Bert Johnson, Vice President of Conway Truckload. He's the Vice President of Human Resources. He's going to be talking all about, and we've had Bert on the program in the past, and he's going to be talking all about right now. Well, Bert, what's going on at Conway Truckload as far as veterans hires?
Hey, Bob. Happy Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to all your listeners out there.
Oh, same to you, Bert. Bert, Conway Truckload is leading the corporations today. They are heads out in front of everybody. You've got it all, training, travel, what? Oh, tell us all about that, Bert.
Well, you know, Bob, about 16% of our employees are veterans, and that's well above the average number of military personnel that have served in the country. And, you know, we see it as one of our responsibilities and duties to hire vets. The vets closely match our values and work ethic that we have as a company. And we have several programs to help vets learn how to drive for Conway Truckload.
You know, what's so cool, folks, here you are, you're a veteran. Oh, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not trained. Well, you can be trained. A lot of these corporations are training people because they know that's where it is. But they've got to get the basic person down, the basic characteristics about military people that are bringing the skills, not just of the skills that they learn in the military, but the skills they learn as a person, the skills they learn for teamwork, getting the job done. And what do, Dale? They follow...
They follow orders.
You're darn right.
They also have plan B, C, D, and E.
That's right.
Just in case.
And they will say plan C, D, and E. And if nobody's around and they got to make a decision, they do, just like we did on D-Day. You know, the American Army was not going to be stopped. And neither are these folks that Bert is talking about. So, and how long have you had this program, Bert?
We've had the program for several years. Really, ever since when you go back to the early 90s, that's really where this program took off, the Conway Apprenticeship Program. And it helps transition military vets into driving positions for us.
Oh, that's so cool. Because everybody talks, well, what happens when they get out? They're just left on their... No, they're not. There's corporations like Conway Truckload that have these programs as transition. They have the training, what they're looking for. Come on, get out there, sign up. I don't want to hear about anybody who can't find nothing. Well, you can because they're out there and they do have these training programs. How far do you take that? Do you get the CDL? Do they get to complete their CDL?
Yeah, they get to go to truck driving school. They get to get trained. They get paid while they're training with us. And they get their CDL and they go out on their own. And we've had success stories. In fact, we have a couple of our drivers who are former vets on the call with us today, Bob.
Well, they call that in this business a segue. So how about line one, Derek? We got that? All right, we got Jeff Thurlow. Jeff, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Jeff was an Army vet, and Jeff has been with Conway Truckload 3 years?
6 years.
6 years.
6 years, Bob.
And I'm looking at some of the things that Listen to this, folks. What does Conway mean to me? This is Jeff. He said, being happy with my job. You know, when I was a DJ on Friday, the most requested song was "Take This Job," but yet we don't hear that from somebody like Jeff working at Conway. Tell us about being happy at your work.
Well, it's a place I know that I really want to spend the rest of my career at, and I want to eventually move down there when my fiance gets done with her nursing degree and move my family down there and spend the rest of my life down there in Joplin.
And where's she getting her nursing degree?
Montcalm Community College.
That's in Michigan, folks. So that means that Jeff will be able to transfer down to Missouri. Why are you going there?
Why am I going there?
Yes. Is that your family?
I love being down there. I love being in the area. Whenever I come down there, everybody makes it feel like I'm at home.
And you can make that transfer and still be with Conway Truckload. He's not going to lose his seniority, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's fantastic. Now, some of the things that you talked about at working with Conway, that you're treated with respect and you're being a driver finisher. What's a driver finisher?
When the guys come out of the truck driving schools and they get brought on with Conway, they have a bunch of us finishers that take them out. Basically, it's knock off the rough edges and polish them up and make them be the best and safe drivers they can be out here.
Folks, if you have a question for Bert or for Jeff or any of us on here on Veterans Radio, yeah, we pay the freight, 844-838-1600. That's right, we pay that. So don't hit, but please make it topic specific, okay? If you got an idea for a new program, we have many ways that you can get that to us. So be topic specific. Call us at 844-838-1600. And now also on with me is U.S. Air Force veterans, Stacy Simmons. Stacy, welcome to Veterans Radio. Whoop, did we lose Stacy? All right. No? Okay. Do we got a caller back? He's shaking. Yeah, he's going to call her. In the meantime, Jim, you got a question for Jeff or Bert?
I do. I've got one for Jeff. How did you find Conway 6 years ago when you got when you were looking around?
Basically, it's you look on the internet and you're looking for jobs out there within the trucking industry. And I narrowed it down to a couple, and I asked, you know, my instructors at the school there, and I asked them which one was the best that they thought I should go to, and Conway was number one on that list.
Well, that's great. Did tell us a little bit about your military service and what your MOS was.
I was 11 Bravo. I served at Fort Wainwright, Alaska, from 1996 until 2000. Extreme temperatures up there, but it was a good time. I wouldn't trade anything for the world.
And you trained under the GI Bill too, right?
Yeah, I did, and that's one of the great things with the tuition assistance program is.
And that's at Conway. Excuse me for a minute, Jeff. That's with Conway Truckload. They do have a tuition assistance program. Tell us more. I'm sorry, Jeff. Go ahead. Tell us more.
Basically, when you transfer from you get out of the military and you sign on with Conway Truckload, I think it depends on what state you live in. You get a certain amount of financial assistance. And I tell you, it makes it a whole lot easier when you're going from one job to the next and you're not sure what you're going to do. And, you know, you still got bills adding up out there. So, and Conway's great. You know, they take care of you. They make sure all the paperwork's done right and everything's set to go. So that it makes it real easy.
And we have made connection with Stacy. So we have Stacy Simmons on us, and she's from the U.S. Air Force. Stacy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, everyone. Happy Father's Day.
Well, happy everything to you, too, Stacy. Wow, what a nice, perky voice. Love to hear that. How long have you been driving with? And she's a driver, folks, all right? She drives rigs. She drives the big rigs. And how long have you been doing that, Stacy?
About a year and a half now.
Uh-huh. And what, if you could name one highlight, I know there's probably many, what would you say about Conway Truckload, your job, the whole thing? What's a highlight?
The highlight for me for Conway Truckload is when I got out of the military, finding a civilian job that actually helped veterans and was actually built for us. Because it is a hard transition coming sometimes from military to civilian.
Now, I do want to add one thing. that Stacy, when we were talking the other day, said that when she came on, she was a little apprehensive because of what's, I mean, she's a woman coming into really essentially a man's world, real man's world. And but that was quite the contrary what she had. She was welcomed, and she, well, tell us about that, Stacy.
Well, when I was going through training, I was a little struggling at the beginning, and you would not believe how many older drivers, all gentlemen, was so kind to come over and help me, and they have taught me so much to make me the driver that I am today.
Stacy, how did tell us a little bit about your military service and what your MOS was and how that either related or didn't relate to moving into truck driving.
I was actually a 2TO, and I did transportation and logistics. I went from everything loading semi-trailers to what I pull now to being a load planner for the aircraft and packaging and creating everything. So I really had a lot of insight into what goes on the different part for the truck.
So you kind of knew what you were getting into. And I, where's home for you, Stacy? I have a feeling it may not be Ann Arbor, Michigan with that accent you've got going there.
Oh, no, sir. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Excellent. Excellent.
Tar Heel.
Excellent. And where do you drive? What's a typical route for you?
Actually, I really don't have any typical routes. We drive all the lower 48. I've, so far in a year and a half, I've been to 41 out of 48.
Well, cool. Bert, you're back with us. Wow, those are great examples of your 16. How many employees do you have, Bert?
We have about 2,800 employees.
And you're now in a big hiring because you're expecting all kinds of business coming. By the way, all the companies out there, you want to ship something, ship it by Conway Truckload, right? Right. There we go.
There you go, Bob.
You got it. Let's get that out there. Because what? They take care of the veterans. And I did ask Bert for something specific, and he brought a male and a female. So we did that on purpose. We wanted folks to really feel that, hey, that's out there, and everybody can do that job. Because the training is so current. Bert, we're coming to our break, and want to ask you, is there something that you want to add very quickly?
We're trying to increase the number of veterans that we're hiring today. As some people know, in the trucking industry, there is a shortage of drivers. And we have a lot of people that are leaving the industry, retiring, and there's not as many coming in. So there are some great opportunities for transitioning vets to come into Conway Truckload and learn a new trade or perhaps even continue the trade that they're on today.
And you will train them? You will help them get the certification they need, the CDL, and the air brakes. There we go. You have to be brake certified to do all. You'll take care of that. Is that right?
Yes. In fact, we have a military liaison that we have on staff that actually helps coordinate to make it very easy and seamless to our veterans.
Okay, folks, now here it is. Bert, what should I want to know more about this? What should they do?
Okay, so there's a couple ways to do that. They can call a phone number of 877-801-6372, or they can go to our website. They can either go to conway.com, or they can go to true2blue.com. So let me spell that out for you. It's T-R-U-E, the number 2-B-L-U-E.com. And we have a specific segment on that website that's devoted to the military.
And Stacy, do you have something in conclusion? Why don't you give us real quick something about your driving experience, Conway, and what it means to you in the future, the whole thing. Wrap it up.
Oh, well, I started off as a company driver, and now I'm as an owner-operator, and hopefully with Conway Truckload, one day I could be a terminal manager, and it means everything to me.
Thank you. I like that. Jeff, real quick, you got a final comment.
Yeah, I owe everything I've got to Conway Truckload, and I can't say enough about them. You guys are guys and gals in the military are getting out and looking for a good job and good pay. Check us out.
We got it. Now you got it. Bert, you get the last comment.
Well, I want to say Happy Father's Day, and I want to say God bless to all the veterans that are out there and all our military personnel that are serving.
Amen. I couldn't think of saying it any better. Thank you, Bert. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Jeff, for being on our program. Feel free at any time. Give us an email. You want to come back on, you're always welcome. We're going to be right back right after this very important PSA. Don't go away.
Of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IABA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IABA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IABA and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio. Good job. There, we're getting those bumps. Dale, you have a little story for us.
Well, I don't have a story. I've got a great event that's going on locally, and that is with Andrew Turner's group, the Veteran Refuge. And, Andrew, tell us what this is all about. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. I appreciate you guys having us on. So the month of June is Post-Traumatic Stress Awareness Month. So our project is to put 22 new crosses out every day for the month to represent the veterans that we lose to PTSD and other mental health issues through suicide every day. So on the campus of Pineview Church in Ypsilanti, 6400 Textile is the address. Every day you can come out there at 7 o'clock. We're putting in 22 new crosses. We're trying to bring awareness to the issue and try to make sure that these veterans that are slipping through the cracks, that we can currently get them to the help that they need and try to make a difference in their lives.
Well, June is PTSD month, and you guys are doing a great job of making the public more aware of this. And so every day you're going out there and putting 22 new crosses by the church. Is that correct?
Every single day, yeah. That's the estimated number of veterans that commit suicide every day nationally. So we're trying to give a good visual representation of the impact that this is having on our community. And we hope that people are able to drive by as they see it grow every day, that they're, able to appreciate what it represents and understanding a little bit more about what these veterans are going through.
Okay, Andrew, we're going to have you back again later in the month to talk more about this. But, Bob, we'll throw it right back to you.
Okay.
Because we're on a break, right?
Thank you. We got the news coming up, right? We can do it, Derek? Got it. Go ahead, big guy.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Walter Ehlers and his brother were in the first wave to hit Omaha Beach on D-Day. Details after this.
I'm retired First Sergeant Matt Everson. I was one of the Rangers who participated in the battle that inspired the book and the movie Black Hawk Down. These are the flags I carried into battle. Please join me, fellow veterans, and all patriotic Americans at the Flag House on Flag Day, June 14th. If you are a veteran, please share your flag and your story on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and tag hashtag the flag I carried. For more information, visit www.flaghouse.org.
Staff Sergeant Ehlers' brother was several hundred yards away on the beach, and they didn't see each other. Ehlers' unit ran into a decimated unit of Bangalore torpedo men and provided cover for them as they used their explosives to blow a hole in the German fortifications. This allowed an American breakup. On June 9th, Ehlers' platoon came under heavy fire. He climbed a hedgerow and called his men to follow. He spotted a German patrol and killed four of the enemy. Ordering his men to fix bayonets and firing from his hip, he destroyed a machine gun nest. He then attacked a second machine gun, killing three more. The platoon moved out the next morning and came under intense fire from both sides. The commander ordered a withdrawal. Ehlers realized that someone had to provide cover. He motioned his automatic rifleman to follow him, scrambled to the top of a mound of earth that provided a vantage point. They began firing on the Germans, drawing fire away from the rest of the platoon. Ehlers was hit in the back, but was able to kill the sniper that shot him. When his rifleman was wounded, Ehlers dragged him to safety. Ehlers was treated at a field station and insisted on returning to action. Unable to strap on a backpack, he strapped on two bandoliers of ammunition, picked up a rifle, and went to find his men. A month later, he was informed that his brother was killed on Omaha Beach. Ehlers was presented the Medal of Honor by Lieutenant General John Lee on December 19, 1944. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Okay, we're back here on Veterans Radio. Every now and then a little something happens, but we get it all out. And right now, we're going to go to our main feature. Dale, did you have anything else to add on the PTSD?
We just wanted to finish up with the Veterans Refuge thing and have Andrew direct people to their Facebook page, which is?
Yeah, it's Facebook at Veterans Refuge Network and then also on Twitter at Veterans Refuge Network. So that's where you can connect with us. We're posting pictures every day as we grow this project all the way till the 30th, where we'll have a community gathering out there and a little memorial service to try to culminate the project.
I commend you and your whole group for doing that. It's very powerful, and it's something that's very important and something that we will be addressing.
Well, I would also like to add one other thing. If people want to help us plant the crosses, we're doing it every day at 7 o'clock.
A.M., P.M.
7 o'clock P.M. Okay. On the weekday. So connect with us on our Facebook or Twitter. Send us a message when you'd like to join us, and we'd love to have the community come out there and help us get these crosses in the ground.
And they are, again, where?
At 6400 Textile in Ypsilanti on the campus of Pineview Church.
Thank you.
Got it. Thank you, Dale. All right. Now we're going to our feature. Oh, are we all set there? There we are. Why don't we put Alan Griggs on? And a big veterans welcome to Alan Griggs, the author of Flying Flak Alley. Alan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Bob. It's good to be here with you, and I've enjoyed listening to the show so far.
Alan Griggs is a senior manager of communications. He's also completed television news reporting, management, political, corporate communications. He's also currently the chair of the Department of Communication and Journalism at Lipscomb University. In addition, Mr. Griggs is producer and reporter for the PBS program The Wild Side. Oh, that sounds really cool. And Mr. Griggs, the author of two books, Flying Flak Alley, that I have right here. It's a personal account of World War II bomber crews and The Life and Tales of Pony Maples Jr. Well, we won't get into that. It's a very interesting name. But what we will get into is Flying Flak Alley. That's with Alan L. Griggs, and that is McFarland Press. Alan, I used to meet at luncheon every couple of weeks with some gentlemen from World War II. They were pilots, they were navigators, they were gunners, they were crew, and they were all part of World War II and bombers. And I was fascinated by their stories. And here, your book came into my possession. And how did you think about putting all this together? Tell us about that.
Well, like a lot of things, Bob, just by chance, really. I was at church one Sunday and talking with a dear friend of mine who worked in the newspaper industry all his career. He was from Brooklyn, New York, and I looked down, and he had this tie clasp on in the shape of a B-24. And I'm thinking, what is this all about? I had no idea that he might have served in that capacity. As it turned out, as he kept talking with me, he had survived 50 combat missions in a B-25 and was a gunner. And he went on and on with this wonderful series of stories he was telling me. Had actually written some of them down. And he was a member of a group that met once a month here in Nashville, where I live, Nashville, Tennessee, where, by the way, the Blue Angels are this weekend. And I just was enraptured with his stories and met with these men who met once a month. And I got up. I don't know what led me to do it after the meeting. And I said, you guys really need to have your stories kept and put in book form.
You know, that's interesting because I felt the same thing. And I was coming back. It was quite a drive to go out to this luncheon where these guys met every 2 weeks. But I heard week after week, story after story, and there they are, folks. They're the ones that lived it. And there were 10 to 20% of the planes were shot down on each mission. Well, tell us, Alan, how many completed? What percent has completed 50 missions?
Very, very few. In fact, it's sort of a romanticized life for those who didn't live it. They get to go home, they get to go back to the base, they get a hot meal, and they get a shower maybe, and they get to sleep in their own cot. But the only problem is a lot of them didn't make it back. And upwards of 80,000 U.S. servicemen, many still in their teens, didn't make it back. And there's something terribly, there's just something terrible to think about, you falling to your death from 40,000, 30,000 feet up. You're in a flat spin, you can't get out, gravity is holding you there, and you're just facing your doom. So they didn't have it easy at all, even though the ones who survived might have made it back to have a meal and a little stiff drink and maybe, maybe if they're lucky, a decent night's sleep. And this went on and on and on, and I encountered guys who came very close to dying just by simply circling in formation for an hour before they went even into the mission. So there are people who don't realize, not to mention all the training accidents that they had, but the ones who made it back were very, very fortunate indeed. And even though 25 missions doesn't sound like a lot of missions, that was the minimum that it took for you to come back to the States. There are a lot of them who didn't make that number.
Oh, man. You know, when you have 800 bombers and you lose 10% or 20%, let's say 10%. No, no, we'll split the difference. So that's what? That's over 100 bombers. There's 10 crew. That's 1,000 men can be lost within a few hours. Tell us about that. What was the effect that you found when you collected all this information? You collected all these stories from these men that lived through it. What did you find about that? How did they handle that?
Well, it really is fascinating because I encountered men who really had very little flying experience before the war, and they were trained to fly these huge machines. They went out and made their way somehow, and to the man, they had no idea how they survived the flak and the fighters. And they came back, and the ones who lived came back, and they resumed their jobs, almost as if nothing had happened. But they had spent that time over there, and it could have been a year and a half or 2 years flying these missions, depending on the weather, and defied the odds. To a person, they would say, I have no idea how I made it through there when the plane next to me or the plane on both sides of me blew up. We were badly damaged to some of them, and they were able to limp back, and then they resumed their lives as almost as if nothing had happened, when we really know deep down that they were profoundly affected by this. And one of the major attractions for me, besides the death-defying odds, was the fact that the bombers didn't get a chance to play around in the air very much. They had to fly the straight and narrow. And they could see this flak coming, and they could see the German fighters or the Japanese fighters above and below them. And they really didn't have any choice. They had to stay the course. And it's amazing that hardly any of them came back when you consider the American daylight strategic bombing methods that they used.
And what were they, the methods?
Well, it was just, again, flying the flying straight ahead and staying on course, timing it down to the fraction of a minute so that you can reach your target, maybe coming over, flying, finding out that your target is cloud-covered and having to fly to a secondary target, which meant additional flying time in hostile air. These missions would last 9-10 hours at a time, and these guys would come back all wrung out. You could twist the sweat out of their uniforms, even though they were up there in the sub-freezing weather all the time.
Alan,
so you talk about courage under fire and bravery, but to see their friends go down beside them, in front of them, above them, must have been just amazing.
Alan, this is Jim Fossone, and one of the hosts here, and the 52 or so stories you tell are just amazing in your book, Flying Flak Alley. Maybe you can tell us about Lieutenant Myron King. Your story is amazing, and I suspect it's not out to most folks. So why don't you tell us a little something about Myron King?
Myron King came out of Nashville. He was a lieutenant. He flew as lead pilot in a plane, B-17, called the Maiden USA, M-A-I-D-E-N, and then USA. He was crippled. The plane was crippled over Berlin, as a lot of them were, and a Russian fighter pilot, and this is illustrated in a painting, by the way, a Russian fighter pilot led him and his crew to a base in Russian-occupied Poland, where they were essentially held captive, and the primary reason is the Russians back then were pretty darn paranoid, and they suspected that King and his crew were spying on them. I don't want to go into all the details.
Oh, except, no. Save it for the book.
Except to say that he was, believe it or not, eventually court-martialed by the United States, his own country. And we believe that it was just primarily a kangaroo court, pretty much a show trial to assuage Mr. Stalin. And in fact, Mr. Stalin knew about Myron King and his flight into Russian territory and had summoned Avril Harriman, the ambassador, to talk with him about it. So the U.S. put Lieutenant King on trial, found him guilty, fined him $500, and was going to boot him out of the Army Air Force. And later they dropped all the charges. He was able to get his money back, but they hustled him out of – then this occurred in Russia. They hustled him out of Russia before anything else could happen to him. There is another book, a short book out about Myron King and his escapade, but I'm not going to give it all away at this point.
No. In fact, we're going to take a break, and we're going to have a very quick PSA. Remember, no out bumps, but we'll have bumping coming in. So we'll be right back in a very short 30-second break.
I'm retired First Sergeant Matt Eversman. I served two combat tours, one in Somalia in 1993, and another in Iraq in 2006. I was one of the Rangers who participated in the battle that inspired the book and the movie Black Hawk Down. These are the flags I carried into battle. Please join me, fellow veterans, and all patriotic Americans at the Flag House on Flag Day, June 14th, as we raise veterans' flags at a special program to honor veterans, their families, and our country. Hashtag the flag I carried. If you are a veteran, please share your flag and your story on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and tag hashtag the flag I carried. For more information, visit www.flaghouse.org.
Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio. Remember, back in Veterans Radio is brought to you by wonderful these sponsors, Big Boy Restaurants of Ann Arbor, Michigan, Legal Help for Veterans, where you can
get your issues dealt with on veterans' disability claims.
Absolutely, and they've been around for as long as we've been on the air.
We have been, yeah. It's, time flies when you look up and go, it's been 15 years already we've been doing this.
So
and,
if you need legal help, not just with disabilities, but disabilities too, folks, you want to go to Legal Help for Veterans, what's that website?
www.legalhelpforveterans.com. You can also find us on Facebook, and in fact, you can find Veterans Radio on Facebook, and you should like us and
That's
follow
true. Us. That's true. Please follow Veterans Radio. You can also tweet us.
And the Applebee's Restaurant, folks, is a proud sponsor of Veterans Radio for the best in family dining. What a great place to go for Veterans Radio. Go ahead.
I was just going to make sure we don't forget, every Monday in southeastern Michigan, every Applebee's 30% off.
30%?
Huh? Make sure you just show your veterans
you can't
ID
get that
card
from
or something.
Your uncle.
No, you can't get 30% from anybody out there, but it's a good deal, and it's a good restaurant. So we encourage you to go to your local Applebee's, and please tell them you heard about them on Veterans Radio.
And veterans, so that's Military Monday. I don't know if all of them participate. They're really,
southeastern Michigan.
Yeah,
that.
So that, but you can
always ask.
You can ask. You can always ask. And on the other days, there's a 10% on the meal. 10% on the other. Wow, what a good way to honor veterans. Okay, well, we're right back with Alan Griggs, author of Flying Flak. Alan, what's flak? Tell us about flak.
Well, flak is, it has different meanings today, but back then it was one of the biggest terrors that a pilot could face, and he could face it just about anywhere with the German 88s pointed skyward. The Germans were very effective at shooting down American planes, British planes, Allied planes, and the 88 was a huge factor in that. They would time their fuses to the altitudes, and once those lead planes got by, watch out, because the flak, and that is the bursting shells, would be all over, color the sky black, basically, and the bombers would have to fly in between those flak explosions.
Now,
flak is short for a long German word. Don't ask me to pronounce it.
Okay. Was that something, when I hear AAA, is that the same thing, double A?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, when I hear AAA, that's anti-aircraft
artillery.
Artillery. Oh, give the man a gift card from Applebee's on that one. Yeah, that. Right now, when I was meeting with the flyboys, this is what I call those gentlemen way back, and I was talking to a navigator of a B-17, and he told me they left at 5 o'clock in the morning to start stacking. Tell us about stacking.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is essentially what would happen, as I mentioned earlier, is that these planes, and a lot of people don't recognize this, they would have to form up over their base and they have to be careful about other bases forming up as well, but they would have a beacon on the ground, and they would fly around this beacon, sometimes for over an hour. And a lot of times, and of course in England, with overcast, they would often fly through the clouds. A lot of accidents that way killed a lot of good men, but they would fly around this beacon until they were all formed up before they took off on their mission. And like I said, this would last more than an hour usually. And you talk about some nervous times, because they were flying tight formation even then before they headed off on their mission. If they survived that, then they headed off on what could be 6, 7, 8 hours in total. Even longer, flying to their target, depending on where it was, and flying back.
Now, when I spoke with this navigator, and he was a very jocular person and pleasant personality, but boy, when he talked about that, stacking, forming up, in the dark, that they had to, what was it, 3 feet between the wingtips? Something. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, very, very close. They kept it as tight as they could because they practiced it that way, and they knew that flying tight over enemy territory was going to result in better protection, improved protection with their guns being trained, to fire in certain patterns. So they had to fly close, and if a pilot just made one particular error, could have meant several planes going down besides his.
Now,
so, yeah, that was particularly scary.
Now, that tight formation, folks, was to bring the many armament weapons on the B-25, B-24, B-17, etc., on to enemy fighters, except for around 1944, something happened, and Sergeant Leonard Mika, he was a ball-turner gunner, what did he find in his sights?
One day he was out on a mission. He was in the ball turret, and Leonard looked down. He saw this blur go by. He couldn't understand what it was. And then the guy, one of the jets flew. It was a German jet. One of the jets flew close enough that he could actually see the red beard and the green flying scarf of the German pilot. It was a blur, but he could see it. And he said he would never forget that sight. He thought he downed one or two of them, but he wasn't sure about that.
And don't forget, folks, the name of the book is Flying Flak Alley by Alan L. Griggs, G-R-I-G-G-S. I know it's Father's Day today, but, boy, wouldn't that be nice if you just gave a little note to Dad tonight and say, I got a great book for you, Dad. You're going to love this for your summertime reading. So that's Flying Flak Alley, Alan L. Griggs, McFarland Press. Dale, you know the importance of flying in formation and having your stacking and getting...
Well, I think it was really fascinating how these big, really lumbering airplanes can get within 3 feet of each other and not clip their wings. I flew helicopters, and we would get, you know, fairly close, you know, where you could look in the pilot's window of the aircraft and wave at each other. But still, I mean, if you made a bad move, you'd clip the wings, and down goes one, two, or three airplanes. And we've seen pictures of these on the, you know, on American Heroes channel and all of these, you know, World War II films. I'm just amazed that these pilots could do this for 13 hours. That's a lot of. I don't think people understand the stress and the pressure just on the muscles in your hands to hold these aircraft steady.
And you're 19.
Right.
20.
Yeah, Harry, one of the guys in the book, and I have 55 men in the book, was Harry Williams out of Tennessee here, who was a 19-year-old kid flying a B-17. He was so naive at the time. He took on a brand-new B-17 in Savannah, Georgia, with a crew to fly it across the ocean. He had to sign a receipt for it. And he asked the sergeant, he was a lieutenant, he asked the sergeant, what happens if this plane is shot down? Do I have to pay for it? It was $250,000. He thought he was going to have to pay for that plane if he was shot down. And eventually he was. He was shot down in the Battle of the Bulge. He parachuted out and, believe it or not, was rescued by troops from Tennessee, his home state.
There was a powerful story that you have in your book about a kid who begged to go up with Harry Williams. Why don't you tell us about that?
This was a kid who just stayed on Harry's back. He had just begged him to go up to be a turret gunner, and Harry kept putting him off, no, I don't want you to do it. I want to stick with my own crew. He finally relented, let him go, and to Harry's just sadness throughout his life, and he had tears rolling down his cheeks when he recalled this to me, that the kid... He was the only fatality on this mission. A small piece of shrapnel had made its way through his clothing, hit him in the neck, and he died. And Harry almost never forgave himself for agreeing to let that kid go up that time.
Now, the ones that were shot down, they wound up in Stalag. Stalag 17 was a great movie. It also was a Tony Award winner. It was a play at one time back in the 50s, and a great movie, folks. You really want to have a good movie, Stalag 17. How accurate was the conditions for the pilots? I know they had separate quarters than the enlisted men. I want you to just very briefly tell us about that.
Well, they had separate quarters, and they would fly not on every day necessarily, depending on the weather, and they would perhaps train on days they weren't flying. But always in the back of their minds was the fact that the next mission might be their last, because when they would come back, if they happened to live coming back from a mission and the others didn't, they would recognize that their bunkmate, perhaps, their roommate's bed was empty because he didn't come back. So it was a matter of keeping that in the back of their minds. They would go to these briefings early in the morning, as was mentioned, and Harry had a great story about the fact that his commanding officers used red string to point out the route of the mission. One day he went in for the mission briefing, and the red string stopped in the middle of the English Channel. And he turned around and he looked, and he said to somebody, "Well, why is that stopping right there? Because what do I do then?" And the guy said, "That's where your good old American ingenuity comes in, Lieutenant."
You're on your own.
There's always a little levity there in the military, folks. Flying Flak Alley, Alan L. Griggs is our guest today on Veterans Radio. What were the goals when you wrote this book?
I've been a journalist all my career, Bob, and I just wanted these stories to be saved for future generations. And I'm so grateful that I was able to get these men at the time that I did, because unfortunately most of them now have passed on. But I caught them at their last good few years when 99% of them agreed to sit down and talk with me, some of whom had not talked about their experiences since they got back from World War II. I had a few who turned me down because I didn't really press them on it, not many. But these are 55, including one fighter pilot in there. There is one fighter pilot of the bravest men I think that I have ever met, been associated with. My life has been so enriched by having a chance to sit down with these men who welcomed me into their homes not once, not twice, three, four times maybe, to have them tell me about their experiences.
Yeah, well, there's our theme music. We're getting down to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for being on our program, Alan L. Griggs, Flying Flak Alley, McFarland Press. That was it's a great book. It really is such pictures, and it's got all that neat stuff that you all can just sit down and witness what these guys did every day.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys.
And Alan, would you come back again, and we'll talk some more about this, because I know there's more and more that we can do. Is that fine with you?
Oh, there are plenty of great stories I'd love to share with your listeners, Bob.
Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. We got 10. Okay, 9, 8, 7. And to all of my crew here who was with me, till next week, you are dismissed.